Coming to you direct from the nerve center of the galaxy's greatest comic. This is the 2000 AD Thrillcast.
Borak Thung, Earthlitz, and welcome to the 2000 AD Throwcast. Now, this is another episode where we're not talking about something specific 2000 AD, but we are talking about Rebellion Comics because the Tammy and Jinty special is out officially next week. There should be some early issues going out to comic book stores. This is a revival of two of the classic girls' comics from the 1970s and 80s. Tammy and Jinty are part of the huge IPC archive that we purchased a couple of years ago, and it's wonderful not just to see us reprinting classic collections, but also doing something special. So this is all brand new material by a lot of brand new creators to the 2000 AD stable, and it's a classic anthology comic in the British style, but all with female characters, and it's just really interesting to see what these new voices have done with some of the classic stories from the 70s and 80s. So in this issue, you've got strips like Justine, Messenger of Justice. You've got things like Maisie's Magic Eye, Bella at the Bar. But then some new stuff, so things like Duckface, In the Cold Dark, and also Rocky the Rovers, which we talked about on a previous episode with Rob Power. On this episode of the Thrillercast, we have just some of the creators involved in this absolutely fantastic special. We've got Emma Beebe, we've got Rob Williams, we've got Rachel Smith, we've got Rachel Ball, and we've got Lizzie Boyle, who's the editor of the whole thing. So it's going to be fascinating to hear what they have to say about some of the strips. If you want a copy of the Tammy and Jinty special, then just head along to any newsagents next week. Or, as I said, some comic book stores have got their issues early. You can also get it from the 2000 AD webshop at shop.2000ad.com. It's also available on the 2000 AD apps for Apple, Windows 10, and Android devices. This, of course, is just one of the specials that we're bringing out this year. Don't forget this week to pick up your copy of the 2000 AD Sci-Fi Special, which is an absolutely wonderful tribute to Carlos Osquera, which doesn't just include some really touching strips that take a look at his iconic characters, Judge Dredd, Strontium Dog, Fiends of the Eastern Front, but also includes his final work with John Wagner on the unfinished Spectre strip. So you not only get the first two episodes of Spectre, you also get the scripts for episodes 3 and 4. It's a really fitting tribute to the much-missed Carlos, so make sure you grab a copy from your local comic book store or newsagent. So without much further ado, let's crack on with this episode. We've got lots of chat with some of the creators behind the Tammy and Jinty special. So it is wonderful to welcome an army of creators and editors on this episode of the 2000 AD Thrillcast as we introduce Lizzie Boyle.
Hello.
Emma Beebe.
Hello.
Rachel Smith.
Hello.
Rob Williams.
Hello.
And Rachel Ball.
Hello.
Hello. So we'll come to Lizzie first, because you're the person who's corralled this legion of creators on the Tammy Jinty special. Tell us a little bit about why you've come on board and the rigors of editing something, editing an anthology, which I guess is what we do on a regular basis, but this very special anthology.
So the initial conversations happened late in 2018. I almost forgot what year it was then. Rebellion have had a whole series of specials coming out this year, and Tammy and Jinty is one of a big gang of specials. And I think just needed an extra pair of hands, an extra pair of eyes to look at and to coordinate the Tammy and Jinty collection. For me, it's been great. I've edited anthologies before. And it was a kind of testimony, I think, a good reference for me that Rebellion trusted me with this. I've been given a good amount of freedom to pick and choose creators who we wanted to have on board, and themes and genres and styles of storytelling and styles of art to bring into the book, but always having the kind of wider team at Rebellion to sort of rely on for the stuff that I don't know how to do, which is quite a lot of it turns out.
And
everybody's been very well behaved.
Oh, marvellous.
Say
wonderful.
That now. They've all been lovely. I highly recommend them for future projects.
Obviously, we wanted to do it was Rebellion's decision to do a Tammy and Jinty special. What do you think is important that we number one went double barreled on the name, and what is it about Tammy and Jinty in particular that you think is worth bringing back?
I think there was an opportunity to call it something like Tammy, Jinty, Sally, Nikki, Sue, and Claire. It could have gone on forever because there were so many. Girls' comics titles from the 50s through to the 70s and 80s. I guess Tammy was probably the best known of them at the time and in the 70s. There's no doubt a sort of epic Game of Thrones cast type thing we could do about the history of girls' comics and the mergers between different titles and different families and so forth. Tammy was probably the best known. Jinty, apart from Misty, which will be very familiar to a lot of listeners, which is very much horror-based, Jinty's probably the one that had a little bit more sci-fi, a little bit more kind of darkness to it compared to some of the other girls' titles. I'm delighted that they've come back and they've been brought back for this special, not least because it's a sort of lost vein of comics in a way. It doesn't feel like there's this sort of mainstream high street newsstand title for girls anymore. So it's nice to celebrate the history of it, but also to look at it and say, well, actually, what is this? There's something different here from what people can buy at the moment, and something perhaps that we should explore further.
One of the things that we've talked about recently on the podcast is the sheer wealth of titles that there used to be on the newsstand, and how the industry basically faded away over time as tastes change, as work practices change, and the industry changed. What do you think is the value of bringing these? Bring a title like this back because it's kind of, you know, I do want to, and you know, we'll talk about this now and then we can get sort of everyone's opinion on it. There's a big move, particularly in terms of toys, of a kind of degenderization. So, you know, no longer telling boys that they have to play with trucks and building equipment, no longer telling girls that they have to play with dollies and you know, princess outfits and things like that. The children should be encouraged to play with whatever they want. So what's the value in reviving a girl's comic?
I think you've come out with the difficult question at the beginning, Michael. That's not fair. It is something that actually you kind of go, yeah, girls' comics, because there are boys' comics, so there should be girls' comics, and actually there should be comics. I think there is still value in exploring what it means to grow up, what it means to be a young person or a young adult, growing up, having experiences, be they experiences at school, be they experiences in society, adventures, whatever it might be, and how people relate to each other and the stories that are within those. I don't care who reads this comic as long as lots of people read this comic. I think that there are stories in there that have a universality that isn't a boy thing or a girl thing or a gendered thing. So hopefully the stories reach beyond that. I do think it's nice to sort of have a special, an anthology where all the stories are girl-led. I think that's something that you don't see too often, and to have that you know, on the high street, I think that's a really important thing, a big sort of statement to say, no, this does belong here, this has a right and an opportunity to seek out a readership.
I want to move on to talking to Rachel Ball now about Bella at the Bar, because I kind of, I think that there's an element of that discussion which kind of feeds into that character, because Bella at the Bar for me exemplifies everything about girls' comics of the 70s and 80s. That kind of something that sounds on the face of it so twee, a girl who wants to become a gymnast, you know, but. There was so much social commentary in that strip. I mean, it was incredible. She was basically the victim of child abuse.
Yeah.
When you're tackling a character like that, How have you updated it while keeping that social commentary intact?
I think she's quite an interesting character because she is so kind of abused in many ways and such an underdog, which is the appeal. It's the fact she's an underdog, but she carries on battling on no matter what. And that's kind of a universal story that works today or works whenever. And I think that's, everybody likes the story of an underdog who battles back. I think what was seemed to be a key element in the early 70s stories was that she was always happy. Having a flick through the early strips that Rebellion sent me, she always seems to be whistling no matter what happens. You know, she's got these really horrible step-parents or foster parents, I can't remember which, and no matter what scrape she gets into. So I kind of wanted to drop that aspect just to make it a little bit more realistic, something that people could empathise with, that everybody has tough scrapes, you get down, but you come back and you work out the solution and that kind of thing. And then also currently, under a Tory government, we've got massive inequalities stretching every day. So that was certainly somebody quite impoverished, having to find opportunities where those opportunities might not have been anymore, might not be anymore. With things closing down, community groups and things, it seems very to the moment, that story. Yes.
One thing that always struck me about Bella at the Bar is an element that I think I see in a lot of comics aimed at girls and young women now, is that of aspiration, of a desire to do more. And that's particularly relevant, and we'll talk to Rob about Rocky of the Rovers in a minute. But it's particularly relevant in terms of sport. Do you think that is the kind of quintessential aspirational story? You know, being good at a sport and overcoming obstacles, whether they are social or physical.
Oh, that's my dog.
That's Millie.
Millie wants in.
Millie has some very strong opinions about girl sport.
Millie features in the special, I'll have you know.
Rachel.
Sorry, I thought that was too long.
Sorry. No. Sorry. I'll talk to him in a minute when he's finished dealing with his dog.
Okay, sorry.
Millie has strong opinions on the state of girls' comics in the 70s.
Sorry, what was the question again?
With sport, is it kind of the quintessential aspirational thing, you know, that you see back in the 70s comics, but now it's something you see an awful lot of in not just comics, but everything aimed at girls and young women? That kind of, you know, sport is a way that you can aspire and achieve equal footing in a way.
Yeah. Does it? Oh, I'm not sure.
I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
I mean, certainly it should be. I mean, there's always that thing with girls. I used to teach in schools for 16 years, so you get the boys really dominating the playground, the girls dropping sports as they started having periods and stuff like that, and becoming a battle to get girls to do sports. It's good. If it is a major feature, I'm not sure I'd notice that in whatever, films, comics, wherever. But it should be. We've got to encourage girls to do sports more. It's healthy.
Sorry, I was going to say, I think one of the aspects is of aspiration. It's this message that aspiration should not be limited. And whether that is aspiration towards sport, whether it's aspiration towards being towards education or profession or adventure, whatever it might be, that the aspiration is to be celebrated and opportunity is to be celebrated and to be sought. Sport has always been kind of there as a useful storytelling device, particularly for underdog stories.
Yeah.
And actually some of the thematic stuff in the archive, when you look at the different types of sports that are shown as kind of suitable for girls, if you like, there is a definite shift from, if you like, the graceful, elegant sports to the more physical, rambunctious sports, even back in the sort of 70s into the 80s and certainly now.
Mm. So I want to come on to talking to Rachel Smith about Duckface, because there's a real breadth of story type in the Tammy and Ginty special, and Duckface seems to me reading it as being very different to the others, in that it's not necessarily about sport, it's not got necessarily sort of heavy sci-fi or fantasy action. Tell me about the lead character and what you wanted to achieve with the strip.
Okay, so Duckface is the protagonist is a young girl called Lottie, who she wants to be a writer. She's a very good writer. She's not very popular at school, however, so she's got a bit of a chip on her shoulder about that. And she's very, very jealous of this girl called Mia, who is the most popular girl in school. And she's always taking selfies and stuff, which Lottie really hates. And she writes a poem about Mia always doing that duck face thing where you pout to do a selfie. I don't know if you do that, Michael. But
not personally. It's more of a kind of smouldering eye thing with me.
I've seen your selfies. she writes a poem wishing that her lips would sort of stick that way, and she goes into school the next day and realizes her dream has come true, and So yeah, I guess I wanted to explore social media a little bit, because I did a project with some young people not too long ago, which resulted in me writing, I don't know if you've read it, Jack and Lucy, a comic I did with Jacob Phillips. But the great thing about that is I got to meet some young people and talk to them about their lives and stuff. And social media means that the kind of problems that maybe we... definitely me, but maybe we all had at school. So the sort of popularity contests, the bullying, the cliques, the comparing yourself to other students all the time, that doesn't stop anymore when you leave school, because you're just always online and you're always seeing what everyone else is doing. So I wanted to take the kind of flavor, if you like, of the old comics and add that modern aspect to kind of bring it into today's world, and I hope that's worked.
Because there's a lot of strips that are in the archive that are kind of little morality tales almost, and it sounds like it kind of fits into that genre.
Yeah, I guess it's about how easy it is to judge other people, but how that's really not a very good way of doing anything. I guess it's about there being always more beneath the surface of someone.
Because you've you're normally to be found doing sort of slightly longer form sort of graphic novel style stuff. How did you find fitting into the, let's call it the 2000 AD style, so that kind of short form anthology format?
I really enjoyed it. I mean, I've done a couple of anthology things. I was in the I'm going to be in the Thought Bubble anthology this year, and I've been in it before. I'm working on a couple of things that are short form, which I can't really talk about. But yeah, I am. It's really refreshing to work on shorter things when you have been working on long form stuff. Just because it's another set of creative muscles that you get to work. It's just good to know that you can control how long a story is, rather than just going, I'll just write a story, and if it's 200 pages, it doesn't matter. It's quite nice to be given that restriction, because sometimes it forces you to be a bit more creative, I suppose. But yeah, it's useful to be able to do both, I guess, which is good.
And you normally do art and your own writing. So what was it like seeing... a character like Duckface, so something that you've made out of whole cloth, be brought to life by Yishun Lee?
It was amazing. It was just incredible. Like I mentioned, Jack and Lucy, that was the first time I got to see another artist, you know, putting life into my scripts, and Jacob did an amazing job. But yeah, I loved it. I loved it. Every page, it was like getting a gift. It was amazing. She just, I mean, Yishan's just bonkers talented. She really knows what she's doing. So I knew I didn't really have to spoon feed her that much with, you know, I didn't have to say, Lottie frowns in this panel. I tried very hard to sort of just tell Yishan how she was feeling, and then she could give that expression at the, you know, however she wanted to, because she's amazing at expressions. I'm just rambling now because
not at all.
It was
wonderful.
Just amazing. It was amazing.
I want to come on to talking to Emma now, because Emma's a veteran of the 2000 AD thrill cast, so knows all about my ad hoc interview style. But what I wanted to talk to you, Emma, was about your strip, Justine, Messenger of Justice, which for me is another kind of quintessential British girls comics of the 1970s and 80s strip, you know, particularly something like Jinty, where you're bundling up lots of different elements, but ultimately this is still a strip about a teenage girl.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I didn't read the girls comics. I had very little context for it, or so, you know, the first time I saw them was in looking at what was provided to me, and it was very exciting to see all of that despite having missed it first time around. But yeah, this it's still very much about being a girl and growing up, and the things that I wanted to get into were, you know, the responsibility versus just coping with your life and having fun and adventure and all of those things that you know, girls are always going to be dealing with.
Tell us a little bit about the strip, because it opens the Tammy and Jinty special with a fantastic page by PJ Holden is it a Minotaur, a sort of horse-headed man?
It's a Minotaur, a bull-headed man.
There we go.
A bull-headed football player, in fact. So yeah, it's so she's just kind of an ordinary girl, and she does something nice for someone who she doesn't know at the time happens to be a Greek goddess. These things happen. And as a reward, this ancient Greek goddess gives her these items that give her powers. Easiest to think of them a bit like sort of Wonder Woman when she gets them. She has a bow, and she has a little sort of mirror that works basically like a mobile phone to speak to the goddess. So she gets all of these things, allows her to fly, allows her to see over long distances with a little scope thing. So she has these things that she's given, and she's kind of given this huge responsibility that comes with them to help people. She's also just trying to date, go out with a boy, and she's, you know, doesn't seem to be all that well liked at school, because some bullying in the background things. So she's just trying to have a normal existence, and then someone comes into it and adds all this stuff to her plate that she can tell nobody about. And I mean, I guess for me, I one of my favorite things of all time is Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and the thing that I loved about that was the meshing of this kind of mythology and responsibility and this strange stuff that's all mythological and mystical and horrific, and then just trying to get on with life and go to class and deal with boys and all of the normal day-to-day stuff, which is frankly hard enough, and the mashup of those was always very, very fun in Buffy. So I was definitely riffing on that a little bit,
because that for me was always one of the fun things about comics like Tammy was that there was that weird contrast between those two things, that the, you know, you've got what you assume girls' comics would be about, which is, you know, boys and makeup and, you know, going to school and everything. And then on the other hand, you've got all these fantastical adventures. I mean, the stuff we've reprinted with Misty and also Jinty. I mean, The Land of No Tears and The Human Zoo, which was the collection we brought out last year. It's horrific.
It really is terrifying. Yeah. I got through Land of No Tears and had to have a bit of a sit down and a rest. It's like, oh my God, I'm traumatized.
But it's Lizzie, let's just come back to you for a second. I kind of want to drill down into this, into the essence of these comics, because like everyone we've spoken to so far, Rachel and Emma, you know, all those kind of contrasts and moral stories and everything, there's so much more depth here than I think anyone ever really gives credit to girls' comics for having in the first place. And yet, you know, like you say, you read something like The Land of No Tears, which is essentially torturing a poor girl for half a graphic novel. And you know, this is actually really strong stuff. It just feels like, you know, so often the kind of reputation of girls' comics is very twee and very safe. But when you actually read them, the opposite is true.
Yeah, it's, and you get a real mix when you go back. I was very lucky to come in to Rebellion and spend a day just looking through the archives, and you realize the kind of the mix, the rich mix within the original comics, of some straightforward morality tales of, you know, do the right thing and the right thing will come to you, some humor, pure sort of slapstick humor, and then, yeah, as you say, these kind of dark, twisted, quite nasty situations that people find themselves in, regardless of genre. So that might be a futuristic nasty situation, or a dystopian alternative universe nasty situation, or going to school, or domestic drama. I think what a lot of those stories do is they put their protagonist in really horrible situations, and you rely on smarts and pluck and being clever or being thinking laterally to get you out of those situations and to cope with those situations. But yeah, there's some amazing stuff in there. There's I was just looking back through some of the notes that I made when I was going through the archive, just to kind of see what was in there. And there's Slave of the Mirror, of somebody who becomes obsessed by a mirror. The Girl Who Never Was. Oh my goodness. A Dance into Darkness, which is a wonderful one about a magical pair of sunglasses which enables people to disco dance fabulously well. But it's slightly more twisted than I've just made it sound. Tomorrow Town, if you get the chance to see Tomorrow Town, which is, it's basically almost sort of foreshadowing life now with digital technologies, smart homes, everything connected. It's incredible. And it's from kind of 1978, I think, 1982. And yeah, wonderful stuff. And as you say, not what you expect, not what your preconceived idea of a girl's comic would be.
I want to come on to talk to Rob now. And, you know, if Millie's got any strong opinions, then she can interject at any given moment. But
this is my last chance.
She's effectively my minder. She steps in if it gets awkward.
Mindy, not Lizzie.
Yes, yeah. That's a different kettle of fish, Lizzie. Yeah. So, Rob, we had Rob Power on the other week to talk about Rocky Race. And for those who are listening that didn't catch that episode, Rocky is the first female lead character in 65 years of Roy the Rover's comics. Do you want to tell us just briefly a little bit about how Rocky came about as a character?
It was kind of an organic thing, really, because there's a little kind of almost like writer's room on Roy the Rovers, which is Tom Palmer, who writes the novels, myself writing the graphic novels, and then we've got Rob Power and Keith Richardson. And when we sort of get together, we sort of talked about, in the initial sort of what we wanted this new revamp of Royal Rovers to be. You know, one of the things was obviously we wanted to push was women's football, because it's, you know, hugely popular and just, you know, with the World Cup at the moment, it's a perfect time to be doing it, with the fact that, 6 million people, I think, watched the England-Scotland game a couple of weeks back, which is huge. I mean, Roy had, you know, giving Roy a little sister who was a very obvious thing to do, and but then it was just a case of who is she, and trying to sort of make her feel three-dimensional and why she's different from Roy. Roy is kind of like the golden boy of football, and always was. You know, he's the blonde haired, he scores the stunning goal, he's a centre forward, and he always does the right thing. And his sister's kind of a bit more, can I say, she's a bit more interesting than that. She's a bit more violent than that, put it that way, you know what I mean? It's kind of been fun sort of trying to work out who she is and how she comes to the fore, and all that stuff with sibling rivalry, which, you know, is her brother's getting all the attention. She kind of resents that. And there's, you know, I kind of like in the story we've done in this one, in the Tammy and Jindy special, when you first meet them, they're arguing over who's gets to sit in the front seat of their mum's car, you know, and Rocky elbows Roy in the ribs. And then when Roy complains to his mum, she calls him a wimp and stuff. And that pretty much sets up who they are, what their relationship is, really.
And like you say, the timing of it is perfect with the Women's World Cup going on. But as we were talking about earlier, there seems to be much more of a focus in mainstream media on women's sport, on sport as, you know, something that women can not only participate in, but enjoy and actually be on a, I mean, this is the message that I'm getting. That may not be what everyone's getting, but the women's sport can just can be just as valid and popular as male football. So how important do you think it is that we took this step now, particularly on Roy's 65th birthday?
Well, it's kind of just, you know, revamping Roy. It was like, and you know, Roy has been around for so long, as we know, and it, you know, was reflective of perhaps what society was like in the 70s and the 80s, and bringing it back, we had to kind of reflect what society is now, and we wanted it to be very sort of ethnically diverse, and sort of as well as sort of like promote, you know, pushing the women's football side of it. And it's, you know, it's a good, I mean, I've got a daughter, she's 10 years old. I mean, you know, the amount of sport she does in school, you know, it's terrific. It's quite right that there's just equality to it, which is something that, you know, we want the comic to reflect. We want it to speak to people in 2019 and beyond, you know, because we're aiming the Roy Rovers comics and Rocky Rovers, I guess, a young adult audience. And you know, it's got to show them what they see day to day, and you know, that's a very healthy thing.
I mean, it you mentioned something that I was going to talk about. It's ultimately about kids. You know, this is a comic that I, as a white middle-aged man, can read and enjoy. But ultimately, you know, we want kids to be picking this up and getting interested in comics and being inspired by this. Is that always in the back of your mind when you're writing Roy and Rocky as well, that ultimately that's the audience that you're appealing to?
Yeah, and I think it's kind of, that's kind of like quite a freeing thing, because in a lot of my other work in the, you know, for other companies or even for Rebellion, you know, you're aiming at a far more, you don't have such an eye necessarily on the age group of who you're writing for. Very often you're just writing something that stays true to the story. And with Roy, you know, from inception, it was, and with the Rocky, you know, it was a case of, no, you've got to aim this at a certain age group. And so you kind of go, it's kind of like been a really interesting sort of storytelling lesson for me, because you tend to kind of go, okay, let's make this story beats quite direct, dramatically direct. And especially in a sports comic, you kind of go, well, you know, they win the match or they lose the match is the ultimate kind of sort of, there's other things that go into it, but it's kind of like, you know, what you do is you go back to those basic building blocks of story. You go, right, what does this character want something and they can't get it and there's obstacles in their way. And if you do that and you don't overcomplicate the storytelling, if you make it fairly direct, you can tell a really effective story that speaks to different age groups, you know, and you can sort of, you know, you can sprinkle in, you know, the old bit of a far more sort of adult social commentary or something you want to put in there. But at the end of the day, you know, it's all about, well, any story is about what a character wants and they can't, whether or not they can get it. So it's been kind of interesting. I've enjoyed it, actually. I mean, it's just like, I think it teaches you lessons that you can take to your ostensibly more sophisticated work elsewhere. Do you know? I think you can learn a lot from doing a 5-page story, a Rocky Verova story.
Rachel Ball, what was your take on this with Bella at the Bar, the kind of compressed format where you've got to have a beginning, middle, and end within 5 pages, and as Rob says, you know, there's the person either succeeds or they fails. With someone like Bella at the Bar, how do you add nuance to something like that in such a short space of time?
I found that quite an interesting challenge. I would agree with lots of the points Rob made. I find it quite a learning curve, actually, because I haven't done lots of short strips for quite a number of years, and I've been doing longer things like graphic novels, so you can waffle away. And I am quite a waffler, so it was really good for me to be concise. Nuances, yeah, probably through personality, expression, emotion, just... I can't think of examples now, but just sort of subtle takes between individuals, just little touches that demonstrated backstories. There's a little bit at the beginning, which felt very 80s, where Bella gets knocked off her bike and she's delivering pizzas by this minibus, bringing all these very posh rich girls back to their school. And when she's on the floor and the girls are laughing at her, you know, classic mean girls, the girls go back in the school and she finds a locket. And the locket has a picture of these two girls in, which has its own story, which kind of leads into the bigger story when she goes in and finds the girl and they become friends. So, yeah, little touches that express the story of the characters. The two girls, it turns out, one of the girls is the dead sister of another girl. So there's a little extra story going on that is only touched on. But I think Vanessa did amazingly because I gave her quite a lot of panels to do and she had a bit of a challenge. I'm sure Lizzie helped her with that, fitting so much in. I looked at some old Bella strips and was like, okay, lots of them have 10 panels per page, so fine, she can go with that. But yeah, I think she did really well there, actually.
That's something that's always the case with anthologies is, yeah, Lisa Hepko, drew the Rocky of Verova's strip here, and I mean Lisa's terrific, but it's by the very nature of them being so condensed, you tend to cram in your average is about 6 panels a page, and that can be a shot. But Lisa actually she added panels to ours, and they were terrific as well. I think she's kind of she's made for this format. If she can add panels to a 5-page script and still make it all beautifully clear and sell the emotions and everything, then you're laughing.
Yeah, don't think Vanessa could have added any panels.
I have to say, I will speak up on behalf of letterers as well, because I know that for Jim, when he got that one through, he's like, "There's no space. What do I do?"
You don't need space.
Don't need space, Jim. You're a genius.
Hold on, Jim.
I kind of want to bring it around to looking at why something like the Tammy and Ginty special is whether it's important, whether it's a concept that should be, that you think should be expanded, whether we should, you know, run on from this and do more, what you think the lessons are to draw from it. And I'll come to Lizzie last, because obviously she's been the one in charge, so, you know, we'll get her thoughts last. But Rachel Smith, were you a reader of kind of these girls' comics when you were younger, or had this kind of... I'm sorry, I don't know how old you are, so I don't know whether this will pass you by or not.
I'm getting to the age where I don't get to say this very much, so I'm going to enjoy this, but it was a little bit before my time, so I did sort of miss out a little bit. But when Lizzie offered me the gig, she very kindly sent me some scans of the old pages, so I read those with relish, and they were amazing. So So yeah, I have read them, but not until later in life.
Right, right, okay. And what's your take on the issue of girls' comics and you know, what the Tammy and Jinty special is necessarily trying to do with an old format, bringing it up to date? What's your feeling on it?
It's a funny one because I mean, like Lizzie, I just sort of think that they're all just comics and they should be read by whoever wants to read them. But growing up, I like the Beano and the Dandy never really floated my boat very much. I mean, I sometimes enjoyed them, but I didn't get super into them. So maybe if something like Tammy and Jinty had existed for me back then when I was a kid, I would have preferred those, I want to say subtler stories, but that's maybe not quite right. I don't know, the Beano was always a bit one note for me. It's just sort of slapstick all the time, which mm-hmm. which is great, and some people really like that, but I wanted something with lots of different flavours in it, I suppose. I've forgotten what the question was. I'm sorry.
trying to explore whether, because as we talked about earlier, you know, there is a general trend towards degenderization of toys, especially for kids. But here we are.
I'm into that. I like that.
Exactly. But here we are. The Girls' Comic. I mean, I guess it was interesting. Last year we had a panel at San Diego about the Treasury of British Comics and the IPC archive and what it means, and the angle of that was very much. Zach Davidson, who's a manga translator, said, you know, this is basically just British manga from the 1970s, because it's everything you could possibly, every subject is covered, every possible angle is there. So it's not, Rosie Knight, who was one of the panelists, said she was on board with girls' comics mainly because, you know, it's a bit of a corrective. You know, you don't run necessarily, and I'm paraphrasing here, you don't necessarily run away from gender within comics, but there is a way to celebrate it by just doing everything. You know, do you feel that, or would you rather something like Tammy and Jinty special be broken up and have more variety in terms of lead characters, things like that?
I mean, I love the variety, especially the, you know, as I say, I've not read the new Tammy and Jinty, but the old comics. I love how one minute you're reading about space and the next minute you're reading about the Second World War. Like, it's I really like that. As far as writing for gender, which I think is what you're kind of getting at, is that
yeah?
Yeah, it's hard. I never really know who I'm writing for until my editor tells me what I've done. Like, I write a story and then my editor's like, yeah, we'll pitch this at this demographic. I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I don't know. I think naturally I tend to write for young women. I guess maybe there's a part of I write for me in the past and what I might have needed to read back then, which is a nice way of thinking about it. But it's a really tough question, because I don't know what it would be like if I was a man. Like, what I don't know what I'd be writing if I wasn't me. But I do enjoy writing for young women, whether I mean to or not. they're always the you know, the young women tend to make a beeline for me at conventions, for example, more so than young boys or older boys. So yeah, they are my audience, but yeah, I never really did that on purpose. I'm rambling again. I'm sorry.
No, not at all. Not at all. Well, I'll move on to Emma, because Emma, you did a comic book about Mata Hari, the very famous spy that you know, was one of those books that very much felt like it was, it wasn't just about a historical figure, it was also making a statement. What's your feelings on girls' comics as a genre of comic books?
Yeah, well, it's funny you should mention Mata Hari there, because that's kind of, I was thinking about that as you were talking, and thinking that you know, I noticed very much in people's responses to it that women kind of got more of it than men did. It was very much written towards an understanding of those things. Generally, I would say I'm for there being a space for things that allow for girl and female centered stories. I think there should be a full breadth, but it would be nice to have those things for those who are interested in them. I mean, you know, comics has a lot of history of male centered things with some female characters who occasionally kind of get to own the space sometimes. But I think it's very different to have a female led space that deals with those things that are commonplace to women and young women in particular. So I'm all for it, basically. I think it would be good. And it does allow for all these refreshing kind of stories. And I mean, I haven't read all these other ones, but yeah, I'm really excited by what I'm hearing. They sound amazing. So yeah, I think there is something in that. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't want to have, two lanes of comics that are, here's the girls' ones and here's the boys' ones, but I think there has to be a breadth, you know, so that everyone can find what appeals to them, and I think there is a hole there, in general. So please make more.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. Unlike Rachel Smith, I am old enough to have read these first time round, and you know, when I was a kid, I was reading Transformers by Marvel UK, but I was also reading my sister's Care Bears comic, which was
that
real.
That explains a lot.
Yeah, it really does, doesn't it? Real social commentary, cutting edge comics. There, no, it was great. But it's that kind of thing of a comic shouldn't exclude, but it can appeal to, I guess. Rachel Bowl, what's your feelings? Because you said you used to teach, so you know you've got experience of what kids are like.
I'm not sure. There's too many of them to be able to categorise. I was thinking more about some of the points that have been made, because I am old enough and I was reading these comics when I was probably up to 1980, and I found them really empowering, actually. If you think about sort of sexism in children's stories and how it's always heroes, male heroes sorting things out, the girls' comics was always girls sorting it out, and the only alternative was things like Jackie, which were about makeup and getting a boyfriend or photo love and that kind of thing. So it seemed to me it was a real tragedy that generations after me missed out on that. Also, it was just really creative being able to read those fantastic imaginative stories every week. And thinking about the whole thing of girls' comics, I love the idea of them coming back. But I just thought it's really interesting that we don't tend to categorise stuff on TV as a girl's drama so much, or do we? I don't know. I was thinking about things like really popular stuff recently, like Fleabag or Killing Eve. I'm guessing, kind of think it probably appeals to both, all sexes, and maybe it would be fantastic to have drama comics that are thoughtful and tell great stories with a balance more towards female-led characters, but hopefully appealing to people who like stories and don't like seeing women get turned into victims, like a lot of plays tend to, dramas tend to.
I think it's kind of interesting going, if you look back at sort of in the 70s, where people like the creators as much as the material, and you look at, you know, it's mad to think with people like Pat Mills and John Wagner were writing girls' comics before they came to 2000 AD. I think it's just, I mean, it's partly sort of giving the experience the proper kind of, you know, coming out. It's good that there's a lot of female creators involved now who can actually do the material justice, you know, because from their own life experience. Not that John and Pat aren't fantastic writers, but do you know what I mean? It's just kind of like, it just feels like coming up there. It did seem like comics has been a very male-dominated industry, and you know, the more kind of female creators we have is, and you know, it is a very good thing.
Yeah.
because it coming back to the talk we did last year at San Diego, I mean that was kind of one of the things that the panel felt was the overlap between old school British comics and manga as you say, Rachel, they're drama comics. They're not necessarily concept first and then character and drama later. They're fundamentally these are characters and these are the challenges they face, and it's much less what's the word I'm looking for,
gender specific.
Yes, yeah, gender specific and rigid in tropes and stereotypes and the way that characters have to be treated in certain situations. You know, there's all the controversy over as you've touched on, the way that female characters are treated in a lot of Western comics and a lot of Western drama as well. So it's kind of interesting to hear what everyone thinks. I mean, I want to come to Lizzie now and get her take on it all. Lizzie, as the editor of what is ostensibly publicly a girls' comic, what are your feelings on what the other guests have said, and how would you see a project like this going forward?
I think looking back over it and thinking about how we approached this, back in the day, and it's the confession time, I am old enough, there was this route from, if you like, the pure kids comics, the Dandy, the Beano, Whizzer and Chips, Core, Buster, all of that, through girls' comics, then into sort of teen magazines and pop magazines and that sort of thing. When girls' comics disappeared, there's this gap. And so, you know, if as a girl comic reader, a female comics reader, it just ended, it just stopped. So where did you go? Where did you find your comics? And that's why I think you see a lot of girls and young women now who found their way into comics through manga. And then through sort of emergent female-led comics, things like Lumberjanes, which I adore, Giant Days, which I adore. So where the stories are led by girls, they're led by strong female characters, not necessarily kind of just superheroes in bikinis, female characters, but actual female characters. With some depth and some personality and some difference between them. So I think those different genres and different styles of comics have been plugging the gap that existed. So hopefully, you know, the special also contributes to bridging that gap from young comics readers through to teenage and beyond comics readers. I think that would be where I'd sort of situate this. On the issue of different voices and different creators, one of the things that I really wanted to make sure that we tried to do as far as possible was to have just different voices, because why would you not? Why would you exclude voices from, you know, any part of the population, any gender, you know, anywhere? The more diversity of voices we have, the more diversity of art styles we have, the more we show kind of what comics can do and what it can bring to people. And I think that was very, very important as well in putting things together.
For me, the whole thing's kind of nicely summed up by Lisa Henker's cover. Oh dear.
That was Millie again.
Everything's nicely summed up by Lisa Henker's cover where you've got Justine, Rocky, and one of the characters from a strip that we haven't discussed on the front cover, and that third character is wearing a high-vis vest, which I'm also fully on board with. Health and safety in comics is very important, but where, you know, it's not your kind of traditional comics cover. And there was just something about it that for me kind of summed up the feeling of the whole project. I don't know what you thought, Lizzie.
Absolutely. I think it kind of brings together, I suppose, a mood. And all of the front cover from Lisa, the back cover from Kit Buss, and the pin-up from Mike Collins that we have through the comic, through the special, all kind of celebrate that sort of togetherness and that kind of collective power of girls that collective opportunity for girls to do different things and to be different things, and to be whatever they want to be. And there's an element, I hate the phrase, but it's an element of girl power, particularly in the Mike Collins pinup, where the girl is lifting up a comic shop and taking ownership of the whole medium. It's wonderful. So I think that that's a really nice kind of metaphor for the whole kind of approach, really, of what we were trying to do.
I'd like each person, each guest on here to say how they would take this project forward if the opportunity arose, because obviously, you know, we've only just bought this one out. We need to think about the future. What would you like to see coming from Rebellion in terms of girls' comics, in terms of new voices, projects like this? I'll come to Rachel Smith first.
Do more of it.
Fine.
I don't know. Maybe some of the stories could be longer form things, or. I don't know. More, please.
Rachel Ball, what's your feeling?
I think I'm saying the same as Rachel, obviously, because I'm waffly, more pages. just more rich, fantastic opportunities to do interesting stories. Which are focused on mainly on women and all the things that everybody said, you know, just liberating and not being abusive towards women. And we get so much of that in comics and film and TV. Help young women feel better and also enjoy really good stories.
Mm-hmm. Emma, as a regular contributor to 2000 AD already, what's your feeling?
I'm going to agree with everyone. It's just, you know, there's so little out there in the way of, anthologies to start with. And I love an anthology. I think it's such a great format for 2000 ADM for this and all these other things that have been coming out. And it's great to see, you know, Rebellion leading the way on that. So I think there's definitely the capacity to do more. It's a great way to introduce people into comics and to launch new strips and new creators and new things. So there just doesn't seem to be a downside here. So please pass that on.
I'll try my best. Rob, what's obviously the adventures of Rocky Race are going to continue with the Women's World Cup, aren't they?
Yeah, Tom Palmer's currently, I should say, is currently doing something where he's writing a Rocky Race story, which is free online. I think he's doing one every day while the Women World Cup is going on, and that's in partnership with a National Literary Trust. So that's exciting. I know we've got plans to do more with Rocky in the Roy universe. I can't say any more about something that's coming up that's planned for her. But yeah, I don't know. Millie of the Rovers, I think that's what we need. There's certainly space for a story about a plucky football playing dog. I don't know. I mean, I just like to, you know, just what everyone else said. I think, you know, this is a really fun, exciting thing to be part of. I mean, like, look, you touched on the Lisa Hedberg cover. I mean, it's just a real kind of sense of warmth about it, you know, which is it's kind of nice to kind of be involved in something that's just got a real air of positivity about it. So, it'd be wonderful if Rebellion could do, you know, some more of these.
Brilliant. And finally, Lizzie, obviously, I don't need to ask you if you'd like to do more of these, because I assume the answer is yes.
Where's the gin? I mean, I think all credit to Rebellion for investing in this. And I mean, investing financially, but also investing the time and the energy of the team in helping to bring this together. Because the kind of the one path could have been just to re-release stuff from the archive. And that's great, but it doesn't move anything forward. And I think to say, look, we're going to release stuff from the archive, but we're also going to do something new. It's been a real kind of show of faith in today's creators. Hopefully the special is going to encourage young readers of comics to buy more. Hopefully it's going to introduce them to some creators that they didn't know. or that they haven't seen in their newsagents before. So some of the guys here and others who are involved in the book, we're going to get, you know, become high street names fairly soon. That builds their following for their own work and for their published work, their work with other publishers, and hopefully maybe open some doors into some of the other Rebellion titles for them. And I guess last but not least, hopefully the existence of Tammy and Jinty helps to inspire young women and girls to create their own comics and become the kind of next wave of creators and the next wave of voices that are telling stories to us all.
Brilliant. I think on that point is a perfect place to stop. So thank you, everybody. Thank you for bearing with me as I bumbled through questions and forgot people's names and all sorts, but that's just how I am. Brilliant. So yes, I'll let you go. Thank you. Thank you again so much, everybody. Really appreciate it. And yeah, thank you.
Thanks all.
Thank you. All right. Thanks.
Take care. Bye.
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 Well, thank you so much to Lizzie, Emma, Rachel, and Rob for chatting about the Tammy and Jinty special and just some of the issues that it kind of throws up. I mean, whatever you're feeling about girls' comics, you know, this as they say, this is really exciting. I know I speak as an employee of Rebellion, but it's really wonderful to see us taking the archive and putting it into the 21st century and moving forward on some of these awesome creators. So hopefully, fingers crossed, more in the future from us, from Lizzie, and from all of the creators involved, and more new voices. Talking about voices, there's not going to be an episode in 2 weeks' time because Rebellion Publishing are moving. We're going into a new office out the back of the old office. Lovely, spanking, brand new. I might even get a window, see daylight for the first time in 8 years. Very much looking forward to that. But it does mean that the sound booth will be unavailable. So no episode in 2 weeks, but we will be back in 4 weeks' time for more from the galaxy's greatest comics. Whether 2000 AD or beyond. Splendid Birth Trigger, Earthlets.
Alert! 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 Fill power levels dangerously high. Alert! Alert! Read 2000 AD every week. Ask your comic book store or newsagent now. Subscribe to the galaxy's greatest comic at 2000adonline.com. Subscribe digitally on our apps for Apple, Android, and Windows 10. And download DRM free copies from 2000adonline.com. Alert! Alert! Stand by for urgent updates. Search for 2000AD on Twitter and Facebook. Watch the latest videos at youtube.com/2000ADonline and follow on Instagram at Insta2000AD. Program complete. Shutting down.